This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It is episode 10. And it is I'm just making sure I'm not backing into somebody. It is Thursday today. I'm actually setting aside a little time this week to leave a little early, spend a little time with my honey today and tomorrow. Woohoo! Haven't had any, you know, good just quality time here for a while, so we're going to get that taken care of. Things have been busy. Anyways, been a good week. Everything's pottering along. The Lord's been faithful and kind to us this week. I see some friends that are finishing up on a 3-mile jog. They are runners. I need to get back out running again. I'm waiting to wave to them as they go by. They're not looking at me, so I will tell them to listen to the podcast later for the fact that they weren't listening to me. Anyways, this week, had a fun experience. A couple of weeks ago, I had said early on that I'd share stories with you from time to time that others had shared with me about the Lord talking to them. And had a buddy drop by my desk a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, this whispers thing, this works. I said, yes, sir, it does. He said, I got a story for you. He was heading out of town, and he was at home trying to get a bunch of little things done before he headed out of town. And he said several weeks before, he had put in a sump pump underneath his house and had checked it fairly religiously, and everything was working. It was fine, you know, da-da-da. Well, he did, as he was mowing his lawn just real quick as one of the last final things before he got packed and getting ready to leave, he had this little thought, you know, I should check that sump pump again. So he got, and he said, I hadn't checked it, you know, I don't know, days, weeks, something. So he pulls the thing back, he looks underneath, and he said, there is like steam bubbling out of where the sump pump is, and he was going, oop. And so he got under there. If I recall correctly, he said like the paddle part of the pump had gotten broken or something, but the engine was still, the motor was still running in there, and so it had actually heated up that cast iron casing enough that it was causing the water to bubble and turn. So that wasn't so good. So he took care of that before he left. But he said, honestly, he said, I hadn't thought about it in weeks. And he said, I was getting ready to leave, and suddenly there was this little whisper that said, you know, you should probably check that. So he was very, very grateful to the Lord for just kind of nudging him and helping him take care of that before he took off for several days on a business trip. This week, we have been talking about consequences as we've been meeting. Specifically, you know, you have God out there who we know and love, at least some of us know and love. And of course, he has a whole set of things in his righteousness that need to be adhered to, that it would be good to be adhered to. And, you know, then we have this whole idea of free will down here. And at the interface between those two things, God's righteousness and our free will, of course, there's consequence. And we've been talking about consequence. You know, what is the level of consequence that is involved between God's righteousness, God's justice, and our free will? Is he the God of the deists, who say, well, he started it in motion, everything is just rolling along, and he's just sitting back and watching, or maybe he doesn't even care at all? You know, or is he the very present watchdog with the big club, and he's just waiting for us to do something wrong so he can whack us over the head? And what brought this topic up was last week and the week before, of course, the topic for discussion was homosexual marriage. And one of my buddies had gone home and talked to his wife about it, because he had told me, man, everything makes sense. And so he'd gone home, talked to his wife just to get her reaction. And she, you know, nodded her head and said, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense, but if we actually vote for homosexual marriage, are we condoning the behavior? And I felt like the Holy Spirit kind of whispered to me, and I smiled and I looked at him and I said, "So, at what point did Jesus tell us that it was our responsibility to go around and condone or condemn behavior? You know, is that what he said? Well, they'll know you're my disciples by how accurate you are when you go around and you stick a pin in sin." I'm going to give you all these little thumbtacks, and you need to go around and go, "That's sin, tick. You know, that's sin, tick. That's sin, tick." You know, I said, or did he say, and of course he already knew the verse, "They will know you're my disciples by your love." You know, I think we can find a really good example in the life of Christ if we just look at how he dealt with people who maybe, you know, weren't as perfect as everybody else. And of course, I say that jokingly. You know, the tax collectors, the publicans, the prostitutes. How did he deal with them? He certainly didn't go, you know, say, "You people are sinning." You know, he went, he ate with them, he talked with them. He was kind to them, forgave them, was merciful to them. Now, yes, he did tell them, "You know, what you're doing here, not a good idea. You need to quit doing that." You know, but you really don't find in scriptures that I can recall him having harsh words for those who were outside, you know, the religious group. And in fact, sometimes he had high praise. You know, that centurion that came to Jesus and asked Jesus to heal his son. That centurion, I would just imagine that if we would sit down, we would find plenty of things in his life that we could stick a pin in. You know, but when he comes to Jesus and he approaches Jesus respectfully and Jesus, you know, says it'll come, and he says, no, you listen, you know, you don't even have to come into my house. You just say the word. Just say the word and my son will be healed. And Jesus looks and marvels and he tells the crowd, "I haven't found this anywhere in Israel." So, you know, it seems to me that Jesus treated those who didn't quite measure up to whatever the standard of the day was. It seems to me that Jesus treated them with a lot of respect, a lot of kindness, a lot of graciousness. The ones he didn't treat, oh baby, I mean, if you read, I think it's Matthew 23, when Jesus goes after the Pharisees and the Sadducees, I mean, it is harsh. You know, the people he's sticking the pin in are actually the people who are going around sticking the pin in everybody else. And I mean, he is highly critical of the religious elite of the time. Very critical of the fact that they are building barriers between people who want to know God and God himself. Laying them down with rules that don't make any sense and saying, "You have to do this, you have to do that." You know, those are the people that Jesus really goes after. And so, you know, if that's our guideline, I don't know that we would do some of the things that we do if we'd keep remembering that what Jesus said is, "They'll know your my disciples by your love." We have several churches in Springfield. Pretty much, you know, it's pretty much to get too many blocks without seeing a church. I mean, that's because we're in the Bible Belt. And of course, all those churches have marquees. And there is a variety of signs that get put on those marquees. And I gotta tell you, some of them tickle me to no end. We have one particular church that I'm just not sure if they have an extremely dry sense of humor, or if the sign guy is there just being subversive, or I don't know what the deal is. But this church, well, let me give you a couple of examples. This church, there was going to be some kind of a homosexual measure on the ballot. I don't know if it was homosexual marriage or whatever in Missouri. And this church on their marquee that week was, go into your closet to pray, come out of the closet to vote. Now, I don't think, you know, I don't come out of your closet to vote. I didn't quite get what they were going for there. There was another time when, I don't know if they felt like they were trying to promote going to school, but they had on there, Jesus didn't drop out of school, he was suspended. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? Well, a couple of weeks ago, you know, and honestly, people could put on their sign anything they want to put on their sign. And I mean, certainly I'm talking about it. So, you know, I guess they say there's no such thing as bad press. Maybe that's marketing for you. And maybe they have like a really, really shrewd marketer in the church. But I drove by this church last week before last, and I had to pull into the church parking lot to take a picture of the sign to put it on my Facebook page, because I looked at it. I took this picture and it said, let's put hell back in church. Now, hell was in quotes. So then I was trying to say, okay, are they saying let's put hello back in church? Let's put, you know, I was talking to my friends about it, and probably the best comment, you know, I had was one guy, he looked at me, he smiled, and he said, well, you know, I guess for years people have been trying to get the out of church. He said, I guess it's about time we put some back in. So, so he won the prize. Anyways, the only thing that I could figure, and this may be not what they're talking about at all, but I have heard enough people say this, that I'll use that to kind of segue into the attitude that, you know, we just don't preach about hell enough in our church. We need to let people know that, you know, if they're sinning, God's going to punish them, and God's going to send them to hell. You know, okay, personally, I don't think that's such a good approach. Now, it's not that I don't believe in hell. I do believe in hell. I mean, Jesus talked about hell, and I pretty much just kind of try to take what Jesus said at his word, and that if he said it, that's it is. So I do believe there is a real hell, and I do believe that the final and ultimate failure of life is dying without knowing Christ, and I personally believe that God gives people an opportunity in those final moments. I don't think anyone passes into eternity without understanding the choice that they have. So I think when there is an ultimate failure that people can make, when they absolutely refuse and say, no, I don't want that, and, you know, there you go. But I think in this life, there's another dynamic going on, because if you're just thinking about hell and God punishing people, you get into this mode of believing that God's just waiting for you to mess up so he can punish you. But I think when you factor in free will, which as far as we know will not exist in hell anymore, I mean, the time of choosing will be over. If you back up on this side of that threshold, and you start thinking about free will, if God is standing there with a club every time you make a bad decision, and he's going to beat you over the head, you know, it's not, in my mind, there's really not much free will there. Now, it's not that there isn't consequences. You know, there are consequences. But the consequences come out of our free will. Jesus said, as I talk about in the book, Jesus said that you've got two gates. You know, there is a wide gate that leads to destruction, and that there is a narrow gate that leads to life. And by the way, he says in a somewhat chilling postscript to that story, and few are those who find it. But setting that aside, a lot of times when we think about this idea of a broad gate and a wide path and a narrow gate and a straight road, and we think about destruction and life, we let the flesh misinterpret that. And the way the flesh misinterprets that is really, I think, twofold. First of all, the flesh convinces us that that destruction or that life is really talking about the far, far away, way over there in the yonder. And the reason that the flesh does that is because then it can spin us more easily into getting on the broad path, because it can say, well, but you know, you can just be on the broad path for a while, you know, and then you make a decision later to get on the narrow path. Because if it's far, far away, then of course we've got a lot of wiggle room now. But the other thing I think comes out of this whole idea of blessing and cursing and life and destruction is that the flesh is very much interested in convincing us that whatever things and difficulties we encounter in life as the result of our choices, well, you know, that's God. He's the author of that. Because I think that sidesteps the whole issue of the fact that there are engines in the world, that God has placed engines in the world, and it is our free will how we interact with those engines. For instance, there is an engine of gravity in the world. And so if you walk off a building, you fall down, tall building, I had to qualify that this week, let's say a 10-story building, you know, you fall down, make a crater, and you die. Okay, we don't have any concept of the fact that if you walk off a tall building, God's just waiting for you to walk off that building so he can whack you in the head and drive you into the concrete. We don't have that concept at all. We just say, well, yeah, there's gravity in the world. There's an engine, you know. You activate that engine, ping, things happen. I personally believe that God has built lots of these engines into the world. You know, and I think if you activate the engine of fear and that you're in fear a lot, you end up becoming a more fearful person. It grows and grows and grows in you. If you allow anger in life, over time you become a more and more angry person. You know, you become envious, greed, any of those things, any of those elements of the broad path, if you will let them happen in your life as a natural of consequence, you will begin to experience in the here and now, not way, way far over yonder, in the here and now, you begin to have those consequences. And those consequences are a natural result of your free will. And what those consequences hopefully will do is allow you to step back a little bit and say, you know what? This is not so good where this is leading me. I don't really like so much where this is leading me, and maybe, you know, I need to take another path. You know, and because of that, I sometimes get tickled during testimony service where, you know, people say, oh, the devil's really been after me this week. God's really been punishing me this week. You know, I was out with a friend and we were talking about it, and he was saying, well, don't you think that, you know, there are attacks that come against us? And yes, I think there are attacks that come against us. But before we're really quick to label things of that's an attack, that's coming from external, you know, maybe we need to kind of rock back a little bit and take a look at the choices we've made. And I asked my friend, I said, well, like what? And he told me a story about some relatives who have had some difficulties and those kind of things. And so I just started asking questions. Well, do you think they're having difficulties because of X or because of Y? And within no time, he said, well, you know, that could very well be, because they had made a series of decisions that put them in a certain place where there was a certain kind of behavior that was being manifested as a natural course, and they were enduring the effects of that behavior. that's not necessarily an attack, you know, that's just you've put yourself in that place, you know, that's kind of the way it goes. But frankly, the flesh really loves this when we can imagine that God has the big stick, or that the devil, you know, has his pitchfork and he's really prodding us. The flesh loves that, because what happens in those cases is we then look externally for the cause, and we completely ignore the fact that maybe we've been listening to our flesh tell us things that aren't really good things for us to do, and inadvertently we've been activating certain engines in our lives that really would be better if those engines weren't activated at all. There are other things that I think the flesh has us do that really aren't good things to do at all. I mean, Jesus was pretty clear about this. He said, you know, judge not that you might not be judged. You know, don't go around telling people, oh, you know, you have this mote in your eye and that really needs to be taken care of, because he said, why are you working so hard to get a mote out of somebody else's eye when you've got a log in yours? You know, get the log out of yours first. And I think that kind of answers, you know, whether our job is to go around condoning or condemning people. But I think, you know, the flesh pushes us to this idea of going around and pointing things out for a couple of different reasons. One, we really like to pontificate. You know, we like to have that feeling like, oh yes, well, I'm actually above you, and you know, and so you should listen to what I have to say. You know, not that I'm not doing this right now. So I should qualify all this to say, you can make whatever decision you want to make in your life, which I'm going to get to that in a minute. So in case you had the thought, well, he's pontificating. Well, kind of, yeah, but we're going to wrap this up here in a second. But I'm getting close to getting my mail out. But the second thing I think that happens in this is we let the flesh convince us. And this is really upside down if you think about it. Oh, let me get my mail real quick here. See what there is to see. You know, one of the things that really is upside down, and I think the flesh does do this. Follow this line of reasoning. First of all, the flesh sits back there and it says, oh, those people are having so much fun. Look how much fun they're having. They're just going out and doing whatever they want to do. You know, they don't have to toe the line. They don't have to do this. They don't have to do that. Look how much fun that is over there. You know, so that's the first thing it does. And then it gets us kind of worked up about the fact that, yeah, that really is fun over there. I wish I could go do that. You know, well, say, you know, you're trying to live a godly life here, and those people are over there having all that fun over there. And, you know, that's just making it harder for you. So what you need to do is you need to go over there and tell those people to stop that. So first of all, it starts out with a lie. I'm backing into my garage. It starts out with a lie. And the lie is that those people are just having fun over there and there's not really any consequences at all that they're facing. And you would really like to do that, but you know, you can't because you're a Christian. And that's just making it harder on you. And they really need to not make it so hard on you, so they just need to clean up their act. So you need to go over there and tell them that they need to live right. And honestly, I think some of us wanting, not all the time, but I think sometimes we get into this mode of, you know, that the reason that we want people to behave is so that we'll feel better about behaving, because we aren't really convinced that following God's path puts us on a path to success, and it really is a good idea. I mean, one of the weirdest things that I have heard along the way in my Christian path is this whole idea of, well, we can't drink and we can't smoke, so the only thing we have is eating. So it's like the only destructive behavior that God's not going to whack me over the head about is eating. So I'm just going to go ahead and eat because that's all we have left. You know, as opposed to having an attitude of, you know, smoking puts me on the path to destruction. Drinking puts me on the path to destruction. Overeating puts me on the path to destruction. I don't think I want to be on that path. And it should be that same way as we are interacting with people. You know, if we're looking at someone who's sleeping around, we should really tell the flesh to be quiet if it's trying to tell us, oh, look how much fun that person's having. Look how much fun that person's having. Yeah, you know, pleasure for a moment. But in the long term, the damage that it's doing to their soul is not worth it. Because there is a deeper and a more sustained and more wonderful joy that comes from following God and in knowing that the decisions that I am making today are going to be decisions that 5 years ago, I'm going to look back on them and I'm going to say, that was a good decision. You know, so what is our responsibility? In my life, what I am trying to do is create an environment of success for myself and trying to create an environment of success for as many people as I can around me. And I'm trying to be very wise about how I do that. I go to a restaurant. I try to go to the same restaurants over and over so that I can get to know the help, so I can get to know the servers, the wait staff, whatever term we want to use. And the reason that I do that is because we just chat and carry on and talk about this, that, and the other. And at some point, there's an opportunity to share a little deeper, you know, to get down to some of the more core issues of life. And I do not tell them out of the gate, well, you need to get saved. You need to know Jesus or you're going to hell. I mean, I don't do that. I just care about them as a person, want to know what's going on in their lives. And people start opening up and actually, you know, gives me an opportunity to share. So that's the thing for today. I'm looking at my wife. She's putting the dogs in the van. She's coming back. We're going to do a little pecking, spend a little time together today. She's about ready to say hello to me. I think she knows I'm still working on my podcast. But I said all that to say, this is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Have a great week.